Okay, hello everyone. We're going to be talking about Tracker. I'm not sure if you all already know about it. My name is Alexander Morgado, and this is Carlos Garnacho. We are both from Lanedo, a German company providing consultancy services. And we are a couple of the Tracker developers. We have been working in Tracker in the last years. Because of the mic. So we are some of the Tracker developers. We have been working in Tracker for the past years. And in our company, we also have the maintainer of Tracker, which is the one doing the releases. He's Martin Russell. So let's see. We'll be talking about Tracker, about Sparkle maybe, mainly, sorry. This is like a beginner's talk, an introduction to Sparkle, how to use it, and some of the things that you can do with Tracker. So what is Tracker? Tracker is a structured storage. It's built with different daemons. The main daemon is the Tracker Store, which is the real RDF storage. It exposes some Sparkle interface to other applications, even both to external and internal applications. So there is another part of Tracker, which is the MinerFS, which is the one, the daemon crawling your file system, looking, analyzing information from the files and getting that information and pushing that to the Tracker Store. Tracker Store is the real database, let's say, the real storage. Then you will have your application talking to Tracker through DBus. We have a LibTracker Sparkle library that you can use. It will use DBus for read-write queries, and if it's only a read query, it will use direct access to the SQLite database. So in Tracker, information is stored as a graph. So imagine a graph. We don't have tables like in plain SQL databases. What you have is vertices without the objects, and you have edges like connecting the different vertices, which are the relations. And this is RDF for the ones familiar with it. And when you insert data in Tracker, what you really are doing are you mainly do insert triples of data which are split in subject, predicate, and object. Subject and object are both, let's say, vertices, objects of the database, and the predicates are the edges, those with the properties. So you have an object, a property, and the value of that property, which is also an object at the end. And we've prepared some examples. We will go through the slides looking at really silly, simple examples so that you can start learning how Sparkle works. And the first one is the insert example. So inserting an element is just about passing a set of triples where you have the subject, the actual property, and the value of the property. In this case, we are creating an information element object, which is kind of a generic kind of object, and we are passing different kind of properties with different kind of values. In this case, it's triple, it's separated by a dot at the end. You don't need the last dot in the last triple, that's optional. You can put it if you want. And this is completely equivalent to this next one, which is it's just omitting the subject of its triple and using a semicolon to separate the remaining chunks of the triples. At the end, if they all share the same subject, you can do this. And it's what we usually do as well. So let's see if we go here. We already have the examples in these files. So we just create it. It should be set down here. I'm not sure why we don't see it. You can see it there. Yeah, so we just inserted this element that it's set here with properties. So inserting an element is just setting the triples that you want to insert, and that should be it. When you query the storage, you will be using the select and where keywords, which are mainly as in SQL, with the difference that you're working with graphs here, so you don't play with tables and columns in the table. You're really playing with graphs. So the select clause lets you define the data to be returned. The where clause lets you define the minimal graph. Let's say you put a set of conditions, and the minimal graph satisfying all the conditions, that's the graph that you're going to get returned. And for that, we use named variables with a question mark sign, which act as placeholders on the select clause and act as the wildcard on the where clause. And we have a simple example here. Here we will be querying the creator of the resource that we just created before. As you can see, that we can place the variable in whatever place we want. Here we are putting it in the object, but we will see afterwards that we can place it also in the subject and in the property. So we can just run the second example. I'm using minus u here because we are updating, but now I will be using just minus f. Oh, yeah, the third one. Yeah, so that we just query the creator. So building this kind of queries, it's really simple. You just need to know what you need to query. That's one of the most difficult things, and that's what we're going to focus afterwards with the ontologies. So for the fourth example, we will be querying all the properties of an object. Now we place the variable not only in the object, but also in the predicate. So we are querying the values and the properties of a given object. So we will query all of them. Just run it. And there you go. So we have the basic properties that we set when we created the element, but we also get some other properties which are automatically created by tracker, like when was added time tag and things like that. We can also query all elements with a creator. So instead of, we can also add the variable in the subject itself. So as you can see, you can, when you build a query, you can put it whatever you want and make it as complex as you want. In this case, we will be querying all the elements which have a DC creator property, which there will be quite a lot because at the end, we have all the resources created by tracker, by the tracker miner first of all the files that you have. So those are all the previous ones that you see. And that's the last one is the one that we just created. Oops. Yeah. So until now, we have been just selecting minimal graphs. Let's say when you put different where clauses, what you are seeing it's you are selecting parts of the graph to return. But what we can do as well is to put filters on the return data so that you can, for example, let's say you can do comparisons, you can do substring matching, filters can apply arbitrary restrictions on the content. And the next example shows this. So this is the same query that we had before, querying all the DC creators that all the resources with a DC creator property. In this case, what we are going to do is to filter it so that we are only going to get those starting with the string, the king. This filter applies to the whole value. So if you have a long string and this example is with starts with filter, you would be looking for values that start with the king string. Now, the whole string should start with that chunk of information. And if we run it right now, instead of this whole list of things, we should get just the one that we wanted to look for. So filter are quite handy to use, but they are sometimes very slow for some of the things that you want to do. For a much fast search, what we have is FTS. So FTS is the full text search that it's built into Tracker. You can actually disable it if you don't need it. It consumes more resources, both in storage and CPU processing. But it's a very useful thing. So with FTS, instead of applying filters, for example, this start with filter that was applied to the start of the whole string, which is the value, you can apply filters to specific words. So FTS works at word level. FTS will parse the whole string into different words and then apply the condition that you're passing to a specific word, for example. FTS lets you play with, for example, you can ask for, let me, give me resources where one of the values has a word starting with ipsu, or more complex things like give me resources where the value has this word and this word, but not this word. So you can have and or not clauses in the FTS matches. And yeah, it gives you a lot of power to do like full text searches, which is the thing that you do with FTS. And we can see. So here we were looking for ipsu, which is the string that we, so we were looking for variables where there was a word starting with ipsu, and we actually got two results. The previous one is a template that I have for a book, so it's also loading ipsum stuff. And we also have the FUBAR result. So that's mainly the basic introduction to Sparkle that we want to do. Now Carlos will talk more about the ontologies.
Yeah, well, so the ontology is, we've tried to extract the ontology, the concept of ontology here, because, it's a very unfortunate word with a stick to a tracker, I think. So, yeah, so basically we're trying to put it down to some common terms many of us know already from SQL or whatever. So yeah, the ontology is mainly a set of schemas for the data contained in Tracker. It's separated by domains of data, which try to focus on specific things and very things, very specific things such as contacts or emails or whatever. So it's not just generic data. It tries to redefine everything further in order to achieve a set of data which is comprehensive and very detailed. And one very important thing is that it's defined on the same terms than data itself. So the ontology is actually loaded into the Tracker database as a set of tuples, such as the data we've been showing before. And these objects and properties can be redefined further and inherited in order to create more specific incarnations of some property or whatever. For example, with the DC author creator property, it's a very basic one. It's a Dublin core one. First of all, I should be showing the how we query the schema namespaces and then get through them briefly. So yeah. So yeah, here. Maybe we don't see that much on that side. This is the as you could see in the queries before, there was a very long prefix for every property and the such. That's mostly definition from how the whole RDF works. It's all abstracted into this simple, mostly three-letter prefixes, which you can use on your queries and makes the queries and everything quite more readable. And it's one focuses on very specific parts, as I said. So here's a basic list of the data application developers should be most interested in. So we get the most basic data types and the basic definition of resources and properties, as you can see. And on top of that, you start creating more specific sets of data, such as tags and ratings, which apply to documents or media or whatever, you have contacts which specify everything around that context. And then you have files, of course. There's a whole miner in Tracker which tries to extract everything out of your home. And then there's calendars and multimedia and feeds and whatever. So the basic data defines the basic relationships, and then on these other schemas, those basic properties are defined even further, and then made something, try to make something coherent out of the more basic data that which isn't as comprehensive, of course, as the most defined data. So yeah, for example, we can, as I said, with Tracker, all the ontologies and all these schemas are defined on SparkQL itself, so we can actually query them through SparkQL. So yeah, RDFS resource, as we are querying it here, is one of the basic objects, the most basic objects in Tracker, in the ontology. And most of the things actually inherit from that. So yeah, this could be the definition of this object in the ontology, so you can actually query which the data types. And as you can see, that there's this long prefix which resolves to those longer prefixes I've been showing. And it basically comes with a description of the object itself and a few more, maybe the domain it belongs to and which data type it is, or all that information is actually defined in the ontology. So yeah, you can actually get to query so many things because, as we tried to explain about the SparkQL, in that where everything is a graph, you can actually, you can actually connect those nodes and the sets. So we can query the hierarchy of objects within the ontology. Here we are actually asking for every subclass of RDFS resource, every direct subclass of that. Yeah, so what we have here is every object in the ontology that's subclassed out of RDFS resource, which is basically anything in Tracker. We can see that there's plenty of those, and we can see there's also very variated sources, as in related to messaging, to media, or whatever. This can actually can be using SparkQL. You can actually get to pick on all the entire hierarchy of objects and how they are defined in respect to the other. So here we can see, for example, quite some many objects in the ontology which end The second column would be the object it inherits from. So yeah, well, the thing is that the ontology is being a graph of nodes. You can documentation. There's a very nice documentation, but it's quite flat. For example, here in if you build tracker and with the right flags, you get to see the ontology reference, but this is very flat, and there are so many fields. So in this way, you can actually get to pick yourself on the ontology and how it's defined, rather than looking for some list on some list for the right property you're looking for and the such. And And we've been talking about objects, but then there's the properties which establish a relationship between those objects. For example, well, you can have a document tied to an author, but the author could be a collaborator, or could be the main author, or could be. So these properties are also subject to inheritance and further redefinition. So yeah, for example, here we are going to pick on every property of a resource. There aren't that many because this is the basic object. Yeah, and this is the list of properties defined on the RDFS resource itself, but you can of course query whatever an NCO author, and that could be an object which would define a full name and maybe an email address and maybe an other further fields which define which can resolve to a person. So yeah, and this of course through Spark World, you can also get to find every property which is in the domain of any object. So this is could be a very large query because we are actually querying for every property on every object. But you get to see the relation between those this way. So yeah, here we can see the list of properties, and we can see the property it inherits from, and of course, well, the inheritance scheme is quite sane, as in nothing is going to change widely on a subclass, on a subproperty. Yeah, but you could also get to query, of course, the object they're related to and the such. So this is. This can be a nice way to get to pick on the ontology and how is the data defined. And then, here we'd get with this example we could get the entire hierarchy of properties. And of course, you could also filter or specify further whatever parent is in the example or whatever. So you can also pick on smaller pieces. I'm trying to show everything, but yeah, that can be refined further. And here we are, for example, every property and which is a subproperty on something else. For example, I don't know, this the first match would be the title that you can assign on a document, which is a subclass of a title which is has no attachment to any object. So, or on the second example, you can have a, well, I don't know what that element actually is, what the property actually is, but on the third one, content last modified, it applies to files, but it's a further redefinition of the second one. So the second one is a superclass of modified date or the creation date of a document or whatever. So you can see that the properties that can be defined further depending on the context they are used on. Yeah, well, and
that's mainly.
Yeah, we made it fast this time.
So this is not only to let you. We don't expect you to learn about all of this like with these examples, because I know that they're like hard to understand sometimes. But if you want to learn more, you can just play with them and play them with them yourself and spend some time trying to understand what that each example does, and it should be a good way to start learning how to use Tracker and Sparkle.
Yeah, and what maybe what we try to, the point we try to make as well with this is that, well, the ontology can be a very vast resource, but you can't actually tackle it piece by piece using the right tools. And, well, not having, if you go to the documentation, as I said, well, it can be maybe a bit, well, maybe disappointing for the starters and the such, but it's we tried in many ways to improve the documentation. There's no such easy ways, so well, the approach we're trying to take here, I hope, did help a bit more on getting to know what Tracker is and how the data is stored and how can you query it and how can it be useful.
Yeah, thanks. Questions?
Okay, I have three questions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can you install your own schemas?
There's basic support for that. You have to rebuild the database, but yeah, you better talk in Tracker yet about that. So right. It's installed by default for us.
So if you use Tracker, you have to stick like. Practically, from a practical point of view, you have to stick to whatever schemas are there.
You shouldn't store your own application data on Tracker. If it's not like a generic thing which can be shared to other applications, it doesn't make any sense to have it.
Ah, right. Yeah.
So
okay.
Why would you install your own schema? You know?
Because the schemas that are there cannot express what I'm trying to store. Anyway.
If it's generic enough, then it may go into Tracker.
Right. Anyway, I don't want to hijack the questions.
Yeah, but for example, here in this list, it's moved away again. Here in this list, you can see that the ones below, for example, we have some custom support for OS info, which is what's meant for boxes. So yeah, well, we have no problem in including new ontologies in Tracker.
Right.
But thing is that well, constructing the database out of the ontologies, the initial construction is well, it's something that you can't as easily do when the database is already constructed.
Okay.
So yeah, that's a problem to overcome.
So the other question is: say I have a query, and it gives me back a bunch of results. Is there any sort of trigger support so that whenever there are new elements that fall in the scope of that query, or some of those are removed? Can I get that in a notification basis, or do I need to query every time and do a diff between the two results?
Yeah, there was some basic support about that. We haven't emphasized enough on this page. On the wiki, there's plenty of resources about Tracker, and there's some examples about that if I can find them.
Con web no, con Firefox. Go ahead.
If it's going to take too long, maybe we can take this offline and
Actually, examples about that.
Okay. I just want to know if you can do it.
Yeah. There's some minor support. There's actually some properties in the ontology which have defined a property like full text indexed is also a property on certain objects. Mm. So you get those get specially dealt with in the database, and you can query text on it. On those, there's also properties which have a notification property. So you can get notifications of selected objects, not of the entire thing.
So it's not okay. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Well.
So, and my last question is: don't you think that Tracker will benefit from having like more vertical APIs for a specific so that you don't have to do the SparkQL yourself? So say like a contacts
like
a media, API?
Yeah, totally.
Because I think for a long time we've been trying to push Tracker to developers, but is it the right tool for the application developer to use? Because it seems to me that it's way too low in the stack and there's nothing in the middle.
It indeed depends on the entrance level. There, for example, Grillo, which uses
A lot. For things like Grillo and EDS, it makes a lot of sense because that's the kind of right level of integration that you want
to
have.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very nice thing because it will avoid us to explain anything about Tracker to the people using Grillo.
Right.
It's also a very difficult thing, I think, to provide a library, like a very generic library for set of ontologies.
That's why, I mean, they have to be vertical. Like they have to have like a very specific purpose and just use Tracker down below. And that way we could get more people using it.
Yeah, but I think there is that, things have been quite organic over there. As in, Grillo came out of other necessities, but there's no one trying to do a library about contacts, for example, on top of Tracker or anything. So those things come.
Yeah, naturally. So my real question is, don't you think that it'll be a benefit to the project? It's not like I'm asking you to do it. It's more like I feel like for a long time we've been trying to push this, and I'm not sure everybody gets it. Part of the reason is SparkQL. So if we could find ways to hide it.
For very specific things, it's probably a good idea. But for very specific things.
Oh, no, no. No, for generic one, no. Impossible. Yeah.
You mentioned in the beginning it's graph data, or structured data, as you call it. But I think you're using SQLite as the storage backend.
Does
that mean you do some kind of mapping to make it a relational data, or can you talk a bit about how the storage works?
Thing is that SQLite here is an implementation detail.
Is it a very stupid question?
The database is highly denormalized, it could be made as fast as possible. But it's not really comfortable to pick there. Every table is created by code, through code, out of the ontology itself. So, the database itself is not the best structure a human could read, actually.
Okay, is there any specific reason to use SQLite then? Do you use features? Or could you use something simpler data store in a way?
It first had we focused on SQLite because of performance reasons, and we also work a lot on Tracker to make it work on MIMO platform. We mostly quite early we chose to focus mainly on SQLite, but in the beginnings there was a database abstraction, so we don't rely hardly on SQLite features, maybe FTS, but as far as I know, other databases have that as well. So, there's no hard dependence, maybe artificial.
Uh, My question is more on the architecture of Tracker, and in particular in the data store. Is it supposed to be a persistent store or just replicating data that exists elsewhere? Because it's stored right now in .cache, which can be cleaned out by the housekeeping plugin. Mm-hmm. So is it supposed that all applications storing data there also have a dbus activated miner that periodically runs?
I don't think it should be removed by the cleanup.
Yeah, the .cache is cleaned up automatically if you are full of space. Mm-hmm. So if you, I mean, you should move data elsewhere if you expect it to be persistent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. Well,
that's a
point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should be persistent. You shouldn't be revealed in the database anyway. I mean, at any time.
Yeah, but in the same way, on the other hand, there's also a few things that that make it worth for your application to still keep some data itself. For example, I don't know, the full text search thing. Well, we just do a store text, for example, but we pre-process it. We try to remove the spaces in order. So it's not a really one-to-one copy of the data you have in your application, or you might have in your application. It's more meant for search and
sharing between applications.
And sharing between applications, yeah.
So you guys are storing stuff in SQLite, and it's a fair, like a triple store, which is really a bad idea for SQLite. But is this data is like mostly metadata and things that are being updated all the time. And I assume, therefore, they're variable length fields in SQLite, which means you're going to result in a huge amount of fragmentation in your SQLite data store. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that's being done to clean up that fragmentation? Is there anything that's being done to keep the memory use by the application in the page table cache in SQLite down? And additionally, is there any work being done to keep track of the amount of power this is consuming on my laptop? Like, how much battery have I lost by having Tracker installed?
For the battery thing, that we try to only crawl once. That's what we try to do. So whenever you boot and you shut down the computer cleanly, the Tracker should detect that and not recrawl stuff.
Yeah, well, and one thing is Tracker, and the other thing is the miner.
Yeah.
The file system miner.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually noticed the miner's not too bad in terms of churning CPU, but
yeah.
I mean, if I have A time enabled and I have files that have changed, are those getting an iNotify callback and then reprocessed? And is that data then being updated in SQLite? I mean, SQLite is not very good about overwriting data in place, which means you do churn through a lot of disk. And, you know, the way the file system's laid out, it's trying to do this stuff in contiguous space. And you tear up archives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that we are doing anything specific in SQLite to improve that.
Could there is there any option to perhaps replace SQLite at some point with something custom written for this that's like at an actual triple store?
I didn't get that last part, sorry.
Is there any opportunity to replace SQLite with something that's an actual triple store?
There shouldn't be any reason not to do it, but
yeah, there shouldn't be any reason. But we've had people come about that to the Tracker channel, like you should be using this. But the solutions that were proposed at those times weren't really suitable at those times. So yeah.
Okay.
But there's about performance and that, there's obviously ways to shoot yourself in the foot, either with SQL or with Sparkle. So yeah, there's also performance issues on queries that could be made faster, but those are mostly about redoing the query in a way that doesn't fetch as much data or whatever.
Okay, I guess as a user, the thing I would like to see most is from release to release, information on power consumption to like something like power top data, something that's telling us like, is power consumption going up release to release or is it going down? Because as it is now, it's taking too much power. Mm-hmm. Like cuts my battery life by like a third.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll talk about that then.
Any further questions?
Okay, so thank you.